today on Building on the Solid Rock with Pastor Troy Neely.
People will come forward because of a good message and they'll cry and then they go away and there's no transformation. There's nothing that happens. They go away and then they're the same. They stick with it for a while and they fall away. And you wonder, what happened? Did they lose their salvation? Maybe they never experienced salvation. They were touched emotionally, but true salvation, God gives. That true touch, God gives, but He gives to those who approach in humility. Those who are broken before Him.
Deeper and deeper,
deeper and deeper,
deeper and deeper,
I want to know You more.
Pastor Troy will be teaching on the difference between those that have a genuine, humble faith and those that approach God for what they can get out of Him. If you come to God only for His benefits and not for God Himself, you're missing the entire point. God Himself is the prize, not what you can get out of Him. Approaching God in humility and sincerity is the only acceptable way to come to Him. Now make sure and stay with us after Pastor Troy's message. I want to share our contact information with you, as well as how you can receive a free copy of today's broadcast. Now open your Bibles to the Gospel of Matthew chapter 15, verse 21, as we join Pastor Troy for part one of our message entitled, A Humble Faith.
One question that I will often ask myself, or I guess ask the Lord, is why doesn't the world take God more seriously? I mean, God is amazing. When I gave my life to the Lord, I remember I didn't come up as if I just made some business decision. I just come and go, you know, that sounds good. Sounds reasonable. I'll take some of that. Give me some salvation. I'll take it. You know, when I came, when I genuinely came, when transformation happened in my life, and I was a fairly good kid, but when transformation, power came into my life to begin to change some things I didn't even try to change. They just changed in my heart or the circumstances began to unfold. When that happened, it's because I came forward humbly. I came forward broken. I came forward realizing He's awesome. He's great. He's deserving of my life. And He loves me. There was so much that went into that moment that made that decision that helped me to go forward. Too much to express in a Bible study. But it wasn't a business decision. It wasn't just a, sounds reasonable to me. There was brokenness. There was humility when I came to the Lord. And I think that's true of anyone who comes to the Lord and experiences that transforming power. Oh, people will come forward because of a good message and they'll cry and then they go away and there's no transformation. There's nothing that happens. They go away and then they're the same. They stick with it for a while and they fall away. And you wonder, what happened? Did they lose their salvation? Maybe they never experienced salvation. They were touched emotionally, but true salvation, God gives. That true touch, God gives, but He gives to those who approach in humility. Those who are broken before Him. Elijah was challenging the prophets of Baal. All these prophets. And he said, show me if your God's real. Whoever the real God is, let that God consume the sacrifice given to him. So he gave them all day basically to try to get their God to show up. They prayed, they cried out, they even cut themselves and did all the ritualistic things to see if God would show up, their God. Baal. But he never did. He mocked them. Elijah would mock them every now and then. Hey, maybe he's asleep. Maybe he doesn't hear you. Get louder. Maybe he's in the bathroom. They cried out and he never heard them. Because there is no God but all. He's a creation of man. Then Elijah came, put his offering on the altar, poured water around. He gave himself every disadvantage. Wet the offering. I mean, you don't wet something that you're hoping will catch on fire, right? You don't soak it and drench it. He drenches the offering. He puts water around, gives himself every disadvantage, and then prays a simple prayer to God and says that God kind of licked it up, basically. Wow! burned it up. Everyone knew that there's one God, the one true and living God. That's still true today. There's one God, one true and living God who hears prayers, who answers prayers, who changes lives, who's doing a work. So why? Why doesn't the world take God more seriously? And I believe that it's because those who are closest to him, his church, isn't taking him seriously. His followers are giving him less than the reverence and respect due him. We owe him everything. And yet we give him little. We owe him respect. There is reason to still fear God, and yet we don't. Now, if the church, those who know God, will not respect and fear him, why would the world? Why should they? They hear us in the church. We'll argue the points. We'll be dogmatic about theology and heaven and hell and all of these things. But we still are speeding and we're still setting all these bad examples. They see us whipping through traffic just like anyone else, cutting in lines, saying bad words that are unnecessarily in the course of the sentence, getting drunk. See, it just doesn't line up. It doesn't match what you proclaim to believe and how you're living. It doesn't seem that you revere or reverence or fear this God. We see it in our worship, in the way we sing songs. I've seen worship teams, and you can kind of feel that they're singing songs. I experienced that, and I went to Albuquerque this last week. I didn't go to Calvary of Albuquerque. I went to a friend's church, and it just seemed like, I don't want to judge people's hearts. I don't mean to do that here, but as a musician myself, I've learned to be able to sense the difference being a worshiper when someone is trying hard to sing songs and someone's worshiping God. And I think there are too many songs just being sung. And I want to challenge our church too to stop singing songs. Not just our worship ministry. I think they're doing great. I'm very blessed with our worship. But for us, I'll look around and very often I see what looks like some just singing songs. We need to worship God because he's worthy of our worship. Why would we ever stand before him and do anything less? We see it in our worship that we don't revere our God. Some who used to be in awe of serving him. I can't serve him. I can't serve him, man. What if I mess up? I mean, I read the Old Testament. Man, God struck people dead if they didn't do the right things. I mean, can you imagine if in the usher's ministry we said, this is the phrase you need to say when you welcome people, hand them the bulletin this way. If you don't, God's going to strike you on the spot. I don't know if I want to be an usher. I mean, it'd have to be a call of God, right? All right, man, God's called me. And you say the thing and you give it. And there'd be this sense of fear. You'd want to honor God. Well, God doesn't do that. Thank God. I mean, your pastor would have been gone after the first message he taught. You know, we'd be going through pastors left and right. No one could stand behind a pulpit and teach his word. But there ought to be some sense of reverence for God in our service. Because you're not, though you are serving people, and we serve God by serving people, you are serving God. Give him your best. Who cares what everyone else is or isn't doing? Give him everything. That's part of our worship. We see it in our prayer life too. People falling asleep during prayer. In fact, for some, when the pastor says, let's pray, they're thankful because they get, now I can close my eyes and no one will know any different. I mean, in the message, I gotta stay awake. But when he says, let's pray, oh, and we can just sleep. No respect for God. Today, we're going to look at a woman who approaches Jesus the right way. It's with a humble faith. And my prayer is that we're going to learn how we can have a humble faith ourselves, maybe again. So, let's look at verse 21. It says, then Jesus went out from there and departed to the region of Tyre and Sidon. And behold, a woman of Canaan came from that region and cried out to him, saying, "Have mercy on me, O Lord, Son of David. My daughter is severely demon-possessed." Here's one thing that we need to embrace if we're going to have a humble faith. One, you need to recognize your need of Him, especially His mercy. You need to recognize, you and I, we need to be aware that we need His mercy first and foremost. We can't come to Him with just a shopping list of things. Jesus travels to this region of Tyre and Sidon. It's about 35 miles northwest, and He's in Gentile territory. Maybe the reason that He went up there was because the religious leaders, the Pharisees, the scribes, some of the notable in Israel were starting to confront Him. And it was kind of getting in the way. He has this agenda to teach His disciples, look, I'm leaving the faith with them. Everything's going to be built on these guys. So let's get away for a time, and I need to instruct these guys. So whatever the cause, whatever the reason, He goes up into this area, and it's a Gentile territory. And this woman approaches. She's a Canaanite. The Canaanites were supposed to have been all destroyed. Now, Israel didn't do it. And here's this descendant, a Canaanite woman. She knows what her lot was supposed to be. She knows that this is not her Messiah. And yet, here she comes to Jesus, and she cries out, and she calls Him a Jewish title, Son of David. Son of David. This woman had apparently heard about who Jesus is, to use this title. She had heard the good news of the Messiah who had come, and also she had heard of His abilities, that He is able to heal. So she comes, she responds, she goes to Him. I wonder how many around us, in our circles, need to know that there is someone who knows about their problems, who can heal them, who can fix them, give them hope, but they haven't heard it from you or me. For some to realize there's a resource out there. See, our problem is we think we need to debate people and win them. Really, all we need to do is help them to see. Help them to realize there is a resource. There is one who loves them. We just need to make them aware that Jesus is there, who He is. That way on their own, even without you being around, at least they know they can have access. I don't know how many people have come and they said, my mom's Jesus. Or I had a friend in high school who was so committed to the Lord. And I hated him. I mocked him and stuff. But today, having watched their faith today, with no one telling me, no one dragging, no one winning an argument, today I've come because I want to find that Jesus. We have life left. We have breath left. We have family members left who are unsaved. They're watching our lives. Our lives will give us the ability to speak into their life. So if you don't act like a Christian, if you're not helpful, if you're distant, I don't have time for you. Corban, I'm dedicated to the Lord. Then they're not really going to want to hear about your Jesus. They're not going to want what you have. But when they see you are willing to help, when they see that you're going out of your way, when they see that you are making yourself available as you can, yet with the Lord as your priority, then that opens the door for you to be able to speak into their lives. And then they begin to look for the Jesus that you have. Well, this woman had heard about all that Jesus could do. And being in her situation, she knew that the only hope she might have is this Jewish Messiah, the Son of David, Jesus. She hears that He's in the area. This is amazing. He's here. And so she goes. She takes advantage of the opportunity, and she approaches Him based upon what she knew about Him. And look what she cries out for. She doesn't give her bucket list. She doesn't come to Him, give me this. Oh, my daughter, find some way to build this compassionate story so that you'll give me what I want, Lord. She comes and says, have mercy on me. Will you have mercy on me? Please be merciful. She didn't go and say, I claim it. You said your character is, and so I claim it. She said, despite what you've done, despite what you've given everyone else, despite the promises I've heard about this Messiah, I just come and I ask for mercy. Please be merciful. That's a humble heart. It's a heart we all need to have as we approach God. We ask Him for big things, great things, and there's no problem with that. He's able to give big things. We can expect great things from the Lord as we are submitted to Him, as we are His. However, we must never forget to approach Him humbly and on the basis of His mercy, because we all need mercy. Romans 3:23 says, "For all have sinned. All fall short of the glory of God." None of us is better. None of us is deserving. Well, I've been walking with the Lord 10 years faithfully, got rid of alcohol, got rid of these things in my life, and man, there's nothing else really to shed. So man, of course God can bless me. No, we can't have that attitude. We need to realize that God does what He wants through who He wants. And all we need is His mercy. Lord, be merciful. And the good news is He is merciful. Look at Jesus' response, though. It's very interesting how He deals with this woman. Verse 23 says, "But He answered her not a word." Be merciful to me, Jesus. Help me. Can you help me, Jesus? Silence. I mean, is that the Jesus you know? Well, if we're honest, it is. Have you ever cried out to Jesus and it seemed like there was no response? Nothing? There have been times in my life when I've cried out to God, I wanted a situation changed. Or I wanted answers, just anything to help me understand what's just gone on. And I cry out to Him. And I'm close to Him. I love Him. He loves me. He's been with me my whole life. I know if there's anyone that He would give that information to, it might be me. He loves me. And yet He remains silent. It doesn't shake my faith. See, I've learned that it doesn't mean that God isn't there. It doesn't mean that God isn't listening. It certainly doesn't mean that God doesn't care. I don't know why. Still hasn't given me those answers. But I do know this, that when He does whatever He does, it is for the purpose of strengthening and building our faith. God wants us to depend on Him, to grope and to cry out for Him. Acts chapter 17, verses 26 and 27 says this, "He has made from one blood every nation of men to dwell on the face of the earth and has determined their preappointed times and the boundaries of their dwellings so that they should seek the Lord in the hope that they might grope for Him and find Him, though He is not far from each one of us." The situation that you're born in, you have every opportunity to cry out to God. I've told you about my dad and how hard he was on me. Some grow up in the church and you think, man, if I'd have grown up with that, I'd have every advantage and I'd have followed the Lord. Not really. Many of them fall away from the Lord. They don't appreciate the advantage they were given. For me, God used a dad who didn't lead me to the Lord, who was kind of angry, who I was afraid of, because instead of turning to my dad, I turned to the Lord. He's the only one I could turn to. I cried out to Him. So God's desire is that we grope for Him, that we cry out to Him, that we turn to Him. He doesn't want to fix everything right away, easy fix, so that no one turns to Him. In fact, in this world, we're promised we'll experience trouble because there's sin in the world. And we see the results of that. We experience the results of that. So His desire is that we come to Him. But here's another truth. He may not give us answers because we wouldn't accept the answers or even understand the answers. He told His disciples, "I have much to tell you, but you are not ready." I want to tell you something. You can't even accept. I keep telling you, I'm going to the cross, and you are still clueless about it. You're still, we want to be on the right and the left. You know you're going to be hanging if that happens. They didn't get it. There are times we wouldn't accept the answer anyway, even if He did explain it. Well, I took your mom at a young age because... And you go, oh God, but that doesn't make any sense. You could have kept my mom around. She was ministering to people, and then you could have done this and this, and then we would have God's little plan for Him. And so He doesn't owe us an explanation. We wouldn't get it. We would just take it and try to fix Him or fix His plan. And so He doesn't share. It wouldn't do us any good. And would it really take away, in the case where there's pain involved, would it really take away the pain? No. It wouldn't. We still hurt. But sometimes he doesn't answer us right away because the answer is coming. He's building your faith. He's making you stronger so that you can get through it, persevere and go, man, it was worth it. You can look back and say, wow, I see the hand of God. I see his work. And our faith is made that much stronger. All this to teach you to look to him, not as a cosmic Santa Claus. He never wants to become our cosmic in the sky Santa Claus where we bring him our lists, but the one to whom we come for comfort and salvation. Now, look at the rest of verse 23. It says, and his disciples came and urged him, saying, send her away, for she cries out after us. But he answered and said, I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. We have two responses here. Neither of them sound like the Jesus that we would expect. Well, one's not Jesus, it's his disciples. The disciples' response is less than compassionate. They were trying to keep distractions to a minimum. Hey, she's bugging us. We're trying to learn here. We're trying to walk. We're tired. And this woman keeps bugging us. Jesus, get rid of her. So that was their response. That was the response of his followers. In fact, many of his followers don't respond quite like Jesus. That's true today as well. We're less compassionate. We think people are in the way. People are the distraction. We could do so much more if we didn't have these distractions. They were also presumptuous because she's a Gentile and surely he's the Jewish Messiah. He didn't come for this. And this isn't the only time. In Matthew 19, children are brought to Jesus and they said, hey, keep the children away and keep them out. Jesus says, hey, let them come. Because unless you're converted and become like little children, I mean, the kingdom of heaven is made for such as these. So Jesus' own people can kind of get in the way, thinking everyone's a distraction, being less than compassionate, overlooking the ministry right in front of them. I remember a story by Jim Cimbala. He's the pastor in Brooklyn, Brooklyn Tabernacle. And he said, it was Easter 1992. They had a wonderful service. All their services were packed. The people were coming forward, getting saved after each service. And at the last service, he remembered just sitting in front, enjoying all that God had done. It had been a beautiful day. He was just touched with emotion. He sees pretty far near the middle or back, it's a huge church, this guy that looks like he wants to come forward, obviously looked like a homeless guy, which was not uncommon, being in Brooklyn and being in the area that he was from. But looked like the guy wanted to come forward, so hey, it's Easter. Come on, the Lord loves you. And so the guy comes forward. So when the guy got close, Jim almost threw up. He said, just the stench. It was a mix of, I'm going to be graphic here, urine, vomit, garbage, you name it. It seemed to be in the mix of that odor. And as this guy came forward, he said, he had to even talk to this guy, he had to turn his head a few times to catch at least some kind of a clean breath. And so he said, so what's your story? You know, I'm guessing you're homeless. The guy said, yeah. He said, how long you been homeless? He said, about 6 years. He said, well, where'd you stay last night? He said, I stayed in an abandoned truck. And Jim was thinking to himself, you know, this is Easter. We got things going on. People are getting saved. This is an amazing event. And now this guy comes in and, look, I'm just going to give him some money and let this be done so we can move on with what's going on. So he went to pull out his wallet. As soon as he started to reach for his wallet, the homeless guy said, put up his finger and said, no, I don't want your money. I don't want your money. He said, I'm dying out there on the streets. He said, I'm dying. And the Jesus that your choir was singing about, I want to know him. And Jim's heart was broken that he would even think that way. No compassion. Overlooking the guy. He said, I'm so sorry. And he began to pray with him.
Deeper and deeper, deeper and deeper, deeper and deeper, I want to know you more.
Well, that's all the time we have for today here on Building on the Solid Rock with Troy Neely of Calvary Chapel Solid Rock. Don't forget to join us next time as we continue our verse-by-verse study through the Gospel of Matthew. You can listen to or download any of our messages by visiting our website at www.buildingonthesolidrock.com. At our website, we also provide information about our beliefs, service times, as well as directions to the church. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can simply email your questions or comments to info@buildingonthesolidrock.com. We'd love to hear from you. Again, that email address is info@buildingonthesolidrock.com. If you're in the San Antonio, Texas area and would like to visit us, Calvary Chapel Solid Rock is located at 17018 Silverwood Drive in North Central San Antonio. Thank you for being with us today. Please join us next time as we continue our study through the Gospel of Matthew.
I wonder why. And I look up and see the hand that I turned from when the storm began, and it covers me.